This is KBOO Portland.
Wednesday, May 15th, 2019 marks the 71st anniversary of the Palestinian Nakba, when hundreds of thousands of Palestinians lost their homes and became what is now one of the largest and longest-lasting refugee populations on Earth. KBOO will be participating in an all-day broadcast along with CKUT in Montreal, WBAI in New York, WPFW in Washington, D.C., and dozens of other radio stations in Palestine, Europe, South America, Canada, and the U.S. From 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Wednesday, tune in for Radio Free Palestine. More information can be found on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/Radio Free Palestine.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class. And for the working class, I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Siegel. I'm here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
And we are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers and host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today in the studio is Stephen and Rachel.
Hey.
Hey, Rachel. How are you doing?
Good.
So we decided we were just going to have a conversation amongst the two of us, focusing in on May 8th and that day of action, otherwise known as a walkout around here. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to see how that goes. We normally have guests, and today we don't. We'll see if we can fill the air with our wisdom for the next 30 minutes. So let's set the stage for the conversation a little bit. So our focus point is going to be May 8th, that day of action. But we also, I think it's important that we also talk about what happened leading up to May 8th. It didn't just happen at the drop of a hat. And also where we are now, post May 8th, because even though that was just last week, there have been some developments since then. So it seems like a good place to start would be talking about Oregon Public Employees United, because we were really on the front lines from the beginning in terms of talking about building for a statewide walkout was what we wanted. And so I think it makes sense to start there. Do you want to say a little bit about some of the things that we did, if you can think back to the beginning of when we started talking about a statewide action?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it would make more sense for you to talk about the inception. I was away last summer when the first meetings happened, and when I came back from my travels, joined in with the effort.
Sure. I think there were a lot of people all over the country and even around the world that were really captured by the Red for Ed movement, the Red State Revolt, call it what you will, but some of the actions that took place starting in West Virginia and then that spread to some of the other states. And we started thinking, hey, why not Oregon? Why can't we do that here in Oregon? We're considered a blue state, not a red state, but why not? We should be able to do that here. And we started having some conversations. The Labor Notes Conference happened in April, and there were some teachers there from West Virginia. I'm not sure from where else. I actually didn't go, but some of
I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was incredibly inspiring.
Yeah. And so it was after that that we really started talking about, hey, let's start building for that. And we had a couple of meetings before our first representative, the first representative assembly following that, which was a little more than a year ago. Oregon Education Association had their rep assembly, and we decided we would try to launch our Facebook group, because that's what the other states were doing, at the representative assembly, and really try to build some excitement for it at the representative assembly. And then it sort of just went from there. When we had some actions, we did a protest in front of Nike, we had a holiday where we went to a couple of different, we did some caroling, right?
Mm-hmm.
We did caroling in front of Representative Tina Kotek's home, and also in front of Julia Brim Edwards' home, singing some fun holiday carols. And yeah, we did some other actions.
I'd like to jump in here
and
say, you know, I mean, we're starting to talk about some of the actions, but I think some of the really important early work that we did was really critically analyze what is happening in Oregon politics and what's happening with Oregon, our Oregon tax policy, and what has led to this crisis in education and education funding, and kind of who are the players that are continuing to propagate this like state of a deficit, and really starting to think about what are the actual policies that we will have to push for to really dramatically change not just funding for education, but funding for all public services, and to make things much more equitable for Oregonians, because we are seeing just massive amounts of wealth everywhere you look around the city, I mean, in particular pockets of Oregon, and people moving here with a great amount of wealth, people making a great amount of wealth, and just trying to figure out like what is the most effective and equitable method to getting a more fair system that puts people over profits, which is one of our slogans. And so that has informed a lot of the work we do.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that's also informed our relationship with our state union, which is, we are seen as kind of an agitational, more militant force within our union, pushing for to deviate from business as usual. And so that can kind of lead us to some of these other things that we were going to talk about.
Great. Yeah. So glad you jumped in there. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about what else was happening while we were organizing, while we were trying to make connections around the state and really get the message out that there isn't a shortage of money. Like you said, there's incredible wealth in this state, and the problem isn't that there's a shortage of money. The problem is that the people that have it all want to hold on to it all. So one of the things that some of our OEA leaders decided to do was to join a coalition. And that coalition included Nike and a couple of other businesses. Nike has a long tradition of anti-tax advocacy and also anti-worker practices in other parts of the world, if not here. So, Rachel, what do you think of the strategy of working with a coalition like that?
I think you know, Stephen. I think it's deeply problematic. I think that, you know, this strategy has been kind of the status quo strategy here in Oregon for decades, and it has not moved the needle in any way towards a more just and equitable society. And I think that as a union, we should be standing for labor. We should be standing for workers. We should be standing for working class people. And even if there is, for some reason, some agreement on legislation, say, we are still not necessarily agreeing on that legislation for the same reasons. We don't have the same goals. We don't have the same aims. And so I think it's so important that as a union, we are putting the focus, the rights, and uplifting the working class above anything else. And so I really find it troubling to partner with people who are often at odds with what we are aiming to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing I want to sort of talk a little bit about first thing is there's been some criticism of speaking out or critiquing, openly critiquing strategies or leadership decisions. People have said, oh, this is dividing us. You're giving ammunition for the other side, or, you know, all these kind of arguments.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we need to talk a little bit about the value of critical analysis. As union members, everyone, all rank and file members should be able to critically analyze legislation, candidates, our strategy, ideology, all these things. We should be having robust debate and conversations in order to come to a place where we all feel like we are have a common ground, we're fighting and in solidarity with each other. And that's so important to a democratic, fighting, organized union. And so I find it troubling that we're in a place right now where this, there doesn't seem to be room for this.
Mm-hmm.
Or we haven't created the space where this is like an open and integral part of our unionism.
Right.
And so I think that that's an interesting thing that's coming out of this discussion here, because I don't think critiquing or really analyzing like what it is we're doing and the methods and how we're getting there and even what the ultimate gain you know goal is, I think that that's all necessary and important, and I want to see our union have a culture where that is something that's expected and also desired in
yeah.
terms of building, you know, solidarity and strength.
Well, I think it's actually what makes a union stronger is when there is healthy debate within it. We can't help but grow when we are exposed to different ideas and having to back those ideas up. It makes our positions stronger, or we learn something new, right? I think, sure, we don't need to air all our dirty laundry, so to speak, out in public and, you know, attack people for their perspectives. And that's not what we're advocating for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you're talking about is just having healthy debate and having a real interest in hearing different perspectives instead of giving that sort of, you know, false sense of, you know, thanks for sharing and now we're going to get back to business sort of perspective. So let's talk a little bit about our union's reliance on its lobbyists for getting things done in Salem. To me, this is a problem. I mean, we have some really skilled lobbyists. They know how things work in Salem. They have lots of connections. They have a lot of experience. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have lobbyists or that they don't have a place in the union. Absolutely not. But it really seems like right now, and this was a perfect example just in this last year, where we relied very heavily on our lobbyists for deciding our strategy and what we were going to do. And the lobbyists, I mean, their perspective is from inside the Capitol and dealing with politicians. And that is their specialty area. And union organizing and union power, that is not their area of expertise. And yet that's how I feel like they are being treated right now. Like, they are the ones that ultimately understand our power. And they don't. Our power is with our members, right? Our power is, I mean, ultimately our power is in our ability to withhold our labor. That is our most powerful tool. And of course, there's all kinds of other organizing as well. I don't mean to downplay other organizing, but to me, that is a sign, when we are relying on our lobbyists as heavily as we are right now, that is a sign that we don't really have faith in our members to organize and, to make a difference, to have influence. What do you think, Rachel?
I agree with you. I think that, you know, one of the questions I had, and I don't have an answer for this, and I'm asking you, is are there unions that have successfully navigated this, where they have lobbyists and staffers that are sort of embedded in the political arena, and yet are still very not just receptive, but led by the sort of the desires and the push from below of the rank and file. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess like the most successful that I can see currently is UTLA. They took a very long strategy to build a caucus that had a very particular kind of set of goals, and they, you know, worked for 4 years towards that amazing, beautiful strike. But they had very particular demands, and they had legislative demands and legislative ideas that they are now continuing to organize around. So I see that it's possible. Are there other examples that you've seen?
Yeah, I don't know how much of a role their lobbyists played. The other example that comes to mind as far as teachers unions is, of course, Chicago Teachers Union. But I also don't know how much they rely on their lobbyists to get things done there in the Capitol.
I think both UTLA and CTU have in-house research and sort of a organizing unit that they have, you know, hired within their local. So that's a pretty different kind of model than we have here in Oregon.
Let me just jump in, and just in case you're joining us late, you're listening to KBO Portland. This is Labor Radio. Rachel Haynes. I'm Stephen Siegel. We're here talking about May 8th, or at least that's what we're supposed to be getting to. Maybe we should get to the actual day. You want to talk a little bit about what your perspective was, how it was for you?
Yeah, I found it a beautiful thing. I mean, I found it really inspiring to have so many people there. The energy was amazing. I felt like a kind of solidarity and power that I hadn't seen for a while in our union, and I think it was a historic day in terms of a labor action. I was disappointed that there were no demands kind of tied to this day. It was mm-hmm. just sort of a call for funding, and I really think it's so important that we're being like fairly specific about what it is that we're fighting for, because we've been making a call for funding for 30 years, and I guess they need like more specific ideas because it hasn't happened yet. And even the Student Success Act that I just heard passed the Senate today. So now goes to Governor Brown's desk. This is being called the most historic investment in education in Oregon history. And yet we know that this isn't going to start to remedy or rectify the decades of disinvestment.
Right.
And that this is a start, but it isn't enough. And so, you know, when we look at Republicans walking out and basically striking for 4 or 5 days, and they got some of their demands met, and they had demands. And I think that it's time we have very specific demands, and we use our power to organize around those demands. And when what we actually need, when fully funded education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you talk about funding schools, it's so vague, it's so generic. If that's your demand, fund schools. Well, you know, in a sense, we're funding our schools, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we're not working for free. Well, we do sometimes, but, you know, and even fully fund our schools, what does that mean to fully fund our schools? So, yeah, it seems important to get more specific, or it's easy for anybody to say, hey, you were calling for funding your schools, or fully fund our schools. Yeah, we're funding your schools now, so quit your complaining. And I'm not sure what the, I don't know if fear is the right word, but it almost seemed like there was some fear around having actual demands. Like, not only will we not get what we want if we have demands, it'll actually backfire, and we won't get even what we were going to get before we had demands, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what that fear was really about.
I mean, I think that when you see the nexus of power as political negotiations in Salem with lobbyists and business leaders and legislators, then maybe that isn't the tactic you would use as a lobbyist.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about rank and file coming together and having demands and organizing around it, well, demands are very powerful. So I guess it depends on where you see the locus.
That's
of power.
A great point, right?
Yeah.
If you're getting together with your buddies, you probably aren't going to make demands. You're going to say, hey, guys, how about you give us a little bit here and we'll give you a little bit there?
Well, and on that point, I know that, you know, the Joint Student Success Act is not, or Joint Committee for Student Success, was not passed. There was no specific mention of PERS within that act. And yet we see immediately after that act came out of committee, there was a proposal for PERS reform. So,
and for anyone who's listening that's not familiar with PERS, that's a public employees retirement system.
So
mm-hmm.
even though they aren't linked within the bill, they were definitely politically linked. And, you know, now public employees are being asked to take a cut in their benefits in order to fund this. And so this is another problem. I mean, we're asking public employees to pay before we ask corporations to pay, before we're asking the ultra rich to pay more. That's problematic.
Mm-hmm.
I also think there's been talk about the public employees It's been called a crisis for years. The crisis started with the crash at Wall Street in 2007, mm-hmm. and so we're being asked to pay for the crimes of white collar crooks on Wall Street.
Yep.
And not only that, but there have been economists saying that if the payment plan, the PERS board has decided we must pay it back in 20 years. Now I think there's an offer for 22, but there are economists saying that if it's stretched out to 30 years, the crisis goes away.
Yeah.
So
simple solution.
Simple solution.
Doesn't require teachers and other public employees to take a pay cut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so we see these negotiations, like the vaccination bill has been given up, the gun control, stricter gun control laws are given up to the Republicans who walked off the job. What do you think about that, Stephen?
It's a little depressing. It's a little infuriating. It does show
strikes work.
They do work, Rachel. They do. Absolutely. So here's another question. We only have a couple more minutes. Let's do this. So we only have a couple minutes left. How about let's talk about our local unions a little bit and how they seem to be responding to what's happened in Salem. Obviously, there's some new developments today, so we can't really maybe say much about that. But before that,
well, how about if you talk a little bit about Reynolds, because you guys are really rocking it.
Yeah. Well, so we decided to we wanted to survey our members. And so we came up with a two-question survey, but it was pretty agitational. It really laid out in a couple paragraphs what's been happening in the state over the last 30 years.
Uh-oh.
And are we still on?
I don't know. I lost your sound.
Okay. Okay, we're back. Hello, folks. So we were just talking about how our locals were responding to what's been happening. And I'm in Reynolds. I work in Reynolds Education Association. And we came up with a survey, and there were two questions on there. And one was specifically about May 8th and did members feel like that was enough? And then the second question was, do you agree or disagree with this statement that we are prepared to walk out indefinitely if the following demands are not met? And one was passing the Student Success Act, and another was that PERS would not be touched. There would be no cuts to PERS. And that just went out to folks today. So we don't know what the results were. But to me, that's the kind of agitating that needs to be happening, right? We need to be educating our members and agitating them to take action. So I was pretty happy with that.
That sounds great. I have no idea if that's going to happen at MPAT, but I agree wholeheartedly that at the very least we should be having conversations about what it is that we want to stand up for, what we're willing to fight for, what we're willing to organize around. And those are very important conversations to have, and ones that we should be having all the time. We should know what it means to work in a fully funded school system and what it means for kids to have what they actually need, like what every kid actually needs and deserves.
Absolutely.
And we should know how to get there, and we should be able to have conversations about what that journey looks like and how to fight for those things. And I guess that's where we'll have to end.
Ending on a positive note. Thank you, Rachel.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for joining us on KBOO tonight. Thanks to our new engineers, and thank you, Stephen. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Sketchy Beats PDX on Sunday, May 19th from 1 to 4 at Nucleus Portland. Sketchy Beats PDX is a community event that brings together visual and sonic artists to draw together while listening to live sets from local beatmakers. This event is a benefit for Friends of Noise, working to create all ages